Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Amid reports of continued Israeli airstrikes in southern and central Gaza and more rocket fire into Israel from the enclave, UN teams said on Thursday they've been unable to deliver urgently needed aid to civilians beyond central areas and further north for the past 3 days. UN Aid Coordination Office OCHA blamed the lack of distribution on delays and denials along with active conflict. Medicines that would have provided vital support to more than 100,000 people for 30 days were unable to get through, as well as 8 trucks of food for people who currently face catastrophic and life-threatening food insecurity, OCHA said in a situation update. The UN office explained that the security situation, access, transport and deconfliction remained extremely challenging, especially when it came to reaching hospitals in the northern governorates. To Iran now, and the UN's top human rights official, Volker Türk, has expressed shock at a bomb attack that killed scores of people taking part in a public commemoration event in the south of the country. Mr. Türk said in a social media post on X that those responsible for the double bombing near the Saab al-Zaman Mosque on Wednesday must be held to account in accordance with international standards. The UN Rights Chief's condemnation echoed that of the UN Secretary-General, following reports of the bloodbath in Kerman City, as crowds gathered to remember former top general Qasem Soleimani, who was killed in 2020 in a US drone strike. 84 people, including 3 children, were reportedly killed when bombs went off near the general's tomb. No one has yet claimed responsibility for the attack. It's a staggering figure. More than 1 billion people suffer from vision impairment that could have been prevented or has yet to be addressed. That's according to the UN World Health Organization, WHO, which also pointed out that anyone whose eyesight is impaired is likely to be poorer and more disadvantaged than people with 20/20 vision. To coincide with World Braille Day on the 4th of January, in celebration of the organized patterns of raised dots that blind people use in order to read, WHO noted that vision problems often leave people with a lifetime of inequality, poorer health and barriers to education and employment, which is why the 2006 Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities should be welcomed, the UN Health Agency said. It explained that the convention backed the promotion of Braille since it is essential for education, freedom of expression and opinion, access to information and social inclusion. UN programs to help people learn Braille are ongoing, including in Afghanistan, where the refugee agency UNHCR has launched a program offering Braille classes and mobility training to women. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and greetings of the new year. And let's make it a collective New Year's resolution to make 2024 a truly secular new year by doing everything we can, you can, I can to protect our endangered secular democracy. And I can tell you FFRF will certainly be pulling out all the stops to do so.
And I'm Dan Barker. Annie Laurie and I are co-presidents of the FFRF that she just mentioned. That's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And this is our first Free Thought Radio show of the new year, January 4th, 2024. Tori Niels with Audio for the Art is engineering the show in the Stephen Uhl Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
And Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and FFRF was created nationally in 1978 to be a state church watchdog and a National Association of Freethinkers, meaning atheists, agnostics, rationalists, whatever you like to call yourselves. We all disbelieve in the same gods, and we have grown from the original two of us to over 40,000. And we work very hard to keep religion out of government, and we hope if you're not a member, you will join us at FFRF.org.
Today, we're going to talk about Africa. In the second half of the show, we'll speak with Harrison Mumia. He's the founder and president of the largest and most active atheist group in Africa, Atheists in Kenya. Harrison will tell us about why their organization has sued the government of Kenya, and they actually won that lawsuit.
And before that, we're going to hear from a very brave Michigan City Councilwoman, a freethinker, Emily Olson, who has received death threats because she challenged prayer before board meetings.
On our TV show, Free Thought Matters, this week, we reprise our memorable interview with the actor Ed Asner. Ed Asner played many roles in his career, but is best known for portraying the character Lou Grant on the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Well, he's best known to young people for Up and for portraying Santa in the movie Elf.
In Elf, that's right.
We were privileged to meet Ed and interview him in 2019. He did die in 2021. Before that time, he agreed to become an honorary director of FFRF, and we had also awarded Ed Asner our Clarence Darrow Award, a statuette based on our 7-foot statue of Darrow deeded to the town of Dayton, Tennessee, home of the Scopes trial. And Ed's connection to that was portraying William Jennings Bryan in a play that went all around on the road about the Scopes trial opposite John DeLancey.
Ed Asner said some very nice things about FFRF.
You are brave, wonderful people, so essential to a democracy such as America, which needs you badly. You're setting a great example for all freedom lovers.
During our interview, I had asked Ed Asner a question about his religion. No. So you're portraying God. Do you mind if I ask whether you believe in God?
I don't know if I do or not. I don't think so.
You were raised Jewish, right?
Yeah.
So Orthodox Jewish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it didn't take?
Well, it did. I was drilled into me very intensively. My bar mitzvah was a gross failure. It was a terrible, terrible. I sang too high. I sang too fast. I think my dad probably cursed me on that day.
So you could watch that episode. And he also serenades me. So that was really fun. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters with Ed Asner right now on the Free Thought Matters playlist on FFRF's YouTube channel.
And he did serenade you. He actually sings the song Annie Laurie for you, Annie Laurie. If you live in the New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., or Madison, Wisconsin, you can watch that show broadcast on local TV every Sunday. For stations and times, check ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. Or go to our main homepage, ffrf.org, and look under the news dropdown.
Due to financial considerations, we're very sorry that we had to drop 8 other cities where it was broadcasting in previous years, but you can still watch it online.
In a few moments, we'll be speaking with the leader of Atheists in Kenya, but we also have a timely response to a shocking development in another African country.
Yes, the religious dogma is fueling hate and violence in Africa, in several African countries that are jeopardizing the rights and well-being of queer Africans. And in the last week, it was last Friday, Burundi President Evariste Ndayishimiye recently brutally called on citizens to stone gay people. And he claimed that homosexuality is imported from the West, and already consensual same-sex intimacy between adults is eligible for up to 2 years in prison in Burundi. It's been criminalized since 2009. And more than 30 African countries have criminalized same-sex relations. But late last year, in an event with journalist and the public, he shockingly said, and I'm quoting him, "I think that if we find these kinds of people in Burundi, it is better to take them to a stadium and stone them. That's what they deserve."
Take them to a stadium and stone them publicly?
Or? And this is no mystery where this religious leader, he's a Catholic, is getting his justification. It's Leviticus 20:30, which in the Bible horrifically mandates that if a man lie with mankind as with womankind, both of them have committed abomination, they shall surely be put to death, their blood shall be upon them. And he's integrated his idea of God in his politics. He's met with the Pope. He's made many, many objectionable statements, and he's not the only one in Africa, unfortunately. And this is a legacy of the colonialism, because white European colonialism included widespread missionizing and the imposition not only of British colonial law in many countries, which is where they got their anti-LGBTQ laws in the first place, but the imposition of the Christian religion on many Africans. And now we see tax-exempt U.S. ministries continue this missionizing. They're considered to be largely responsible for inciting anti-queer legislation and hate in Africa. And we're going to be talking with a Kenyan soon, but they have their first evangelical Christian leader, and he has spoken out against LGBTQ rights, President William Ruto, saying Kenya is a republic that worships God. There is no room for homosexuality in Kenya. We also have, of course, major problems in Uganda, and we've talked about the President Museveni there, who signed an anti-homosexuality bill that could include life sentence for participating in some same-sex relations, and the death penalty for specific cases. And we need to call out the problem here, which is religion and government, and religion imposed by white evangelical missionaries in Africa.
You know, in Africa, those countries fought strenuously for independence from the colonial powers. Why aren't they fighting for the independence from those religions, from those religious teachings?
Well, there are freedom fighters, and we're going to talk to one of them in a few minutes.
Yes, we are. We're going to talk with the founder of Atheists in Kenya. His name is Harrison Mumia. We're going to take a break, but right after the break, first, before we talk about Kenya, we're going to hear Emily Olson. She's a member of the city council in Owosso, Michigan. She's going to tell us what happened when she requested that her city board stop opening meetings with a prayer. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. Emily Olson is a business owner and member of the city council in Owosso, Michigan. She received a special Nothing Fails Like Prayer Award at FFRF's convention last October for attempting to persuade her city council to discontinue prayer.
Let's listen to Emily Olson's acceptance remarks. She was introduced by FFRF board member Sue Kosher, who is from North Carolina.
FFRF usually reserves our Nothing Fails Like Prayer Award for a person who manages to give equal time, secular invocation in front of their government body to balance out the usual prayers. And there will be such an awardee at our non-prayer breakfast on Saturday. But we have a special non-prayer, Nothing Fails Like Prayer Award for our first speaker, Emily Olson. She's a business owner and a city council member in Owosso, Michigan, my home state. Emily had the audacity to try to end those government-hosted prayers at her local city council meeting, and her refusal to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance and her brave motion to discontinue the opening prayers at council meetings unfortunately failed by a vote of 5-2, and she got a serious death threat for her attempt at reason. FFRF commends Emily for her commitment to secular government, to keeping divisive religion out of government meetings, and for her strong backbone. If only we had a lot more Emily Olsons on city councils and county boards across our nation. Yes. Please come up, Emily, to accept this award.
Good morning, and thank you for inviting me here today to receive this award. My story begins, like so many more before, with optimism and adventure at the forefront. My family and I were living in Arizona during the height of COVID, daydreaming about abandoning our desert life in pursuit of literal greener pastures, when we stumbled on a listing for an amazing old home in Michigan, big enough for all of our kids, and interesting enough architecturally to satisfy 1,000 lifetimes. So we did our cursory search, and the surrounding city and community, we discovered that this home was in an idyllic historic neighborhood in a charming little Norman Rockwell town of about 15,000 people. Sold. We packed up all of our stuff. We closed our businesses. We moved our 4 kids, 2 dogs, 1 cat, and a very persistent betta fish named Bubbles that would not die. And we struck out on this adventure. As we settled into this small town living, we reestablished our businesses and began the agonizing task of trying to find our people. We quickly became aware that Michigan was far more conservative than we were accustomed to. However, we would also come to find out that politics was not the only dividing factor that we would struggle with, because religious zealotry was about to join the stage. A little pro tip for those that don't currently reside in a small to mid-sized Midwestern city, but sexism, chauvinism, and an always ever-present dose of patriarchy are pretty much an undercurrent in every interaction. I have always considered myself a feminist, so when Roe versus Wade was overturned, I grew restless and emboldened to provide an opportunity for other progressive women in our area to find community with one another. It was time to build a tribe, and so a women's organization was formed. We named ourselves the Fair Mavens. You should all join. And we held a think tank summit at my little shop on Main Street, which got the attention of a bully blogger in town who took issue with all that boldness. My shop is aptly named A Woman's Workshop, in big block letters across the front of the building and a 4-foot-tall W on a high marquee, so that there's no equivocating our purpose. We were women that were going to get stuff done, celebrate a sisterhood, and console one another when the world beat us up. So the plan was simple, and it had nothing to do with religion yet. One of the women that I met during the summit explained that she was the only liberal representative on our city council of 7, and when I asked her how I could support her in her efforts, she replied that I could put myself on the ballot in the upcoming election and run for a seat beside her. What made me say sure, consider it done, that evening, I'll never know, but this is when the story takes its most dramatic plot twist. I collected the necessary 50 signatures, and I got myself on the ballot, and then I went to my first city council meeting as a resident. So this poor sequencing choice would set off a chain reaction which brought me here to you today. Exactly. I failed that part. As I sat in the audience, I waved at my friend, and the gavel was knocked, and then the craziest thing happened. The mayor stood up, instructed everyone else to, and to rise and pray to open the meeting. I sat there, dumbfounded, expecting to see other audience members in an equal state of shock, or at a minimum, surprise. But nope, I saw 100% compliance. The entire room had risen to their feet, closed their eyes, and amened to a prayer that thanked Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. And I can tell all of you here today that I was nothing short of baffled in that room. No sooner did they conclude the prayer than they instructed everyone to turn and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Again, I remained seated. I don't recite the pledge. I take offense that the pledge was tinkered with and became a religious buy-in instead of just an oath to your country. And also, it doesn't actually, we don't actually advocate for justice for all. So it's kind of a lie. But anyway, so I stayed sitting down. But in that room, at that moment in Owosso, Michigan, I would come to find out that some of those tightly shut eyes during the prayer were actually peeking and taking notice of my abstaining. And some of those impassioned pledgers were distracted by what my body was doing. I left that city council meeting with a deep desire to lose the election. Not only was everything that I valued about separation of church and state, avoiding bias, and preventing preferential treatment within government not on display in that room, but it was actively being dismantled institutionally. So at the same time that I was regretting my too easily gotten signatures and my name on that ballot, news of my choice to sit out the prayer and the pledge had made its way to that little blogger man I referenced earlier, and he proceeded to try his best to disparage me online and push the community to vote for anyone other than this non-praying, non-pledging, un-American that so clearly didn't represent his community. Fast forward 2 months of this online nonsense, and guess who won a seat on city council? In a big way. That's right, me. In our town, the mayor historically decides if there will be an opening prayer, and so I reached out to the council members and made a pitch to ditch the prayer, hoping that one of them would want to err on the side of creating a space in government free from religious bias. They did not. In fact, what ensued over that meeting was the exact opposite. Each of the members of the council, with the exception of that friend that roped me into this mess, proceeded to lecture me about how the prayer represents our Christian city. Another told me that I should treat the situation as if I was visiting a friend's home and that friend asked me to take my shoes off. You take your shoes off, you show respect. Another council member made the claim that by removing the prayer and asking for a greater, more inclusive room, I would actually be excluding Christians from their God-given right to pray opening a council meeting. So over the course of the next 3 council meetings, we were standing room only, and we were packed with people from in our town and outside of our town with one common theme. They lined up at the podium for citizen comments to talk about me. They talked about the fact that I didn't stand during the pledge and that that was disrespectful to veterans. They wanted to repeal my appointment. There are people that are actively collecting signatures to this day at nail salons and wherever, apparently hoping to get me repealed. By the way, we make $10 per meeting at the city council meeting, so they're willing to like go so far as to spend, let's say, $5,000 or $10,000 to repeal my $10 paycheck. So they wanted to lecture me about my patriotism, compel me to stand for the pledge, whether I wanted to move my body or not. They were perfectly comfortable with me faking it, they told me. Just stand up, don't say the words. If this wasn't fun enough, after 6 weeks of this behavior, I arrived to the city council to find a letter for me from that local blogger sitting on my desk. The man, who claimed to have visions from God, wrote that in spite of his hatred for me, he was now ordained to warn me that I was going to be murdered by the back door of my shop. In his vision, a man who he described in great detail, which matched his own description, in a car, matching the description of his car, was going to shoot me dead on a winter night as I smiled while exiting my shop. So a letter like this is jarring enough, but when everyone in town, from the police chief to the city manager, finds the behavior for this particular individual to be especially alarming, it goes from jarring to terrifying pretty quick. Upon the advice of our police chief, I tried to get a restraining order, but I was denied because in our county, you need to be threatened twice for it to count. Yes. And because the meetings are public, we can't exclude him from these meetings. And so every 2 weeks when I go in there to do my job for the city, I get to interact with this man every single time. And he's at the podium every single time. The biggest gift, though, that I gave myself was permission to share his shameful threat with the public. His death threat slash premonition slash intimidation attempt, whatever you're going to call it, ran on the front page of not just our local newspaper, but nearly every paper in the state of Michigan. I decided, I had decided that this man's zealotry and religious fantasy would be far more dangerous and do far more harm if kept secret, and that any attempt that he's made to coerce me, he would do again and again, and that just wasn't acceptable. So no doubt what I've spoken of today will sound familiar to many of you here. Thousands of people across our country are actively dealing with and arguing with, or worse, accommodating the religiosity that is showing up in all of our government meetings. The fact that it is a common occurrence, though, is the very same reason why I think it's so important that each and every one of us continue to, you know, take these tiny stands and pressure those that would argue that their Christian voice or religious voice is the only voice that should be making these decisions. This is a country in which we are free to practice religion, but not obligated to do so, and I feel it is time for our government meetings to reflect that. That's it.
So that is the brave, and she shouldn't have to be brave to be on the city council. Emily Olson of Owosso, Michigan, accepting FFRF's Nothing Fails Like Prayer Award for her courage in challenging prayer at city council meetings, and that was the speech she gave, the acceptance speech from FFRF's 2023 convention. And I do want to give a heads up that our 2024 convention this year will be held in Denver, and it will be at the end of September. We don't yet have our registration form up or some of the announcements of some of the speakers that and awardees that we'll be having. Last year's convention was, I think, really outstanding. It was a fascinating convention, and we will do our best to make the next one even better. But I can give you a exciting sneak preview that is not yet up on our website, and that is that I've been corresponding with Bonnie Garmus. If you don't remember her name, she's the author of Lessons in Chemistry, the novel which has been on the bestseller list for more than a year and which was even turned into an Apple TV series, which is permeated with atheist characters and atheism. And we're very excited that she's going to be at that convention getting our Emperor Has No Clothes Award.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with Harrison Mumia, who is the president of Atheists of Kenya. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Julia Sweeney, and I'm an atheist and former Catholic. I even wrote a play about it called Letting Go of God. Right now, Catholic bishops are using their considerable influence to deny women contraceptive rights. Please join the Freedom From Religion Foundation and help keep church and state separate. You can call 1-800-335-4021, that's 1-800-335-4021, or visit ffrf.org to stand up for true religious freedom.
It ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome back to our interview segment.
And I'm Dan Barker. It looks like Free Thought is alive and well in Africa. In fact, we're going to be speaking with the leader of the largest and most active organization of atheists in Africa, Harrison Mumia, and we will refer to him as Mumia. He is a digital marketer. He has a degree in computer science, but he's focusing his energies on human rights and atheist rights in Kenya. His organization started, I think it started in 2015 or 2016. It's called Atheists in Kenya. So Harrison Mumia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Dan Baker, for having me here. I'm really excited to be here. And let me just say greetings to everybody listening to this interview podcast. Thank you.
So we'll talk about your history in a moment, but why did you start a group called Atheists in Kenya, and what year was that?
Yeah, the year was 2016, but before that, we already had a lot of activities we were doing. So formally, we were registered in 2016 by the government of Kenya. Why I registered the society is because we didn't have a community of non-believers in Kenya. We didn't have a secular community registered by the government. So I really just wanted to create a community for those who don't subscribe to the religious worldview, and that is why I registered the society.
So there's some drama there because you registered it and then your registration was revoked and you had to go to court, didn't you? Tell us about that.
Yeah, as soon as we got registered, the government of Kenya suspended the registration of the society after, you know, barely 2 weeks, really. And I moved to court. And what I was asking the court was to lift the suspension because as far as I was concerned, the government of Kenya had no right to suspend the Atheist in Kenya Society. We were in court for 2 years, so from 2016 to 2018, we were in court. And the court actually found that the government had gone against our constitution by suspending the registration of the society. So, you know, we were really happy that the courts found that our suspension was unconstitutional. And just to mention, this is just one of the various efforts the government has tried to make to ensure that we do not get any legal status. And so I'm just happy that we are protected by not just the Constitution, but by international law.
I think I read in one of the articles about your lawsuit that the government said that your group does not represent the views of the religious views of the people of Kenya. Is that what they said?
That's what they said, and that's what they have always said. You know, the thing is, if you look at our Constitution, the preamble of the Constitution states that we, the people of Kenya, believing in the supremacy of God Almighty. So the drafters of our Constitution actually had a religious bias. However, if you look at the Bill of Rights, it clearly states that you cannot discriminate anybody on the basis of belief or religion. So when the courts were, you know, interpret the law, they don't use the preamble. They actually use our Bill of Rights. And, you know, no matter how, you know, Kenyans feel or even the political class feels about our society, the Constitution actually protects us. And, you know, we are navigating a terrain where over 80% of Kenyans are religious. And that is why you find people saying, you know, we are not supposed to be registered by the government. We do not belong to Kenya, we are going against the Kenyan majority or even the dominant Kenyan beliefs. But we are telling Kenyans and really everybody in the world that it is a right. You have a right not to believe in a supreme being. You have a right to have an opinion that is different from the majority. And that is how our society, you know, exists right now. And it's a constitutional right. It is actually a fundamental right as well.
Well, hear, hear. And we have heard in the United States many of the same things you have heard.
Yeah.
You know, if you're not Christian, if you don't believe in God, you don't believe, you don't belong in the United States, you should leave. So I guess this is a worldwide problem, but we're so glad that you fought that in court and won. Can you tell me more about, you're saying that most people in Kenya are Christian. How many people are atheists, do you think?
Yeah, there was a census that was conducted, you can actually check it out on Google, by the Bureau of Statistics, Kenya Bureau of Statistics. And it found that we have about 1 million Kenyans. The population of Kenya is about 54 million. So the ones who are atheists or non-religious, you know, are actually about 1 million. So, you know, that's about maybe 2-3% of the population. But that was as of 2019. That was the last official census that was conducted. So with those kind of percentages, you know, we are, of course, going through a lot of, you know, people are not willing to come out because of the stigma associated with atheism. We have a membership, but most of our members are not willing to be open about it because they belong to families that are religious. They belong to communities workplaces where they practice a lot of religion. So there is a bit of a stigma around it. And the Atheists in Kenya Society, which I lead, is committed to normalizing atheism. It should not be strange when you say you're an atheist. It should be normal in Kenya to say that you're an atheist.
So what, Mumia, what was your background and when did you come out as an atheist and why?
Absolutely. You know, I grew up in a Christian family, just like any regular Kenyan. However, when I was at campus, when I was at the university, I thought about it, of course, and to me, it did not, it didn't look like God exists. It never occurred to me that there's a God. So I also delved into just understanding the history of religion when I was at the university. 4 years, I looked at the history of, you know, various African cultures, European cultures, you know, how religion has, even the Muslim, you know, culture and how it has grown and developed and spread out even to Africa. And I realized that, you know, religion is just a construct. It's not really like there is a God. I think what we are having is people who are coalescing around some religious culture. And that is why we have different religions, because, you know, if there was truly a God, then we'd only have one way of worshiping that God or one way of believing in that God. So when I was in the university, I did my own research and, you know, self-thought process, and I came to the conclusion that it's not possible that there is a God or a supreme being who is responsible for, you know, how we exist, how we came to existence, what happens after we die, and this kind of thing.
So, Mumia, there's a lot of atheists in the world, really, but most of them don't have the guts to start a group. What prompted you, why are you so active, and what prompted you to start Atheists of Kenya Society?
Thank you for that. I mean, you know, there has to be a purpose. You know, you have to have a reason. You know, you want to change the world. You want to influence a few things. If you look at the history of the world, you'll see that there are people who have committed themselves to advancing certain things, philosophers, people who have written books, people who have made discoveries, you know. So I think I wanted to just tell the Kenyans and Africa in general that, hey, you know, we have people who don't believe in God and they have a right to exist and they are not abnormal and they should be accommodated within the wider society.
I noticed,
I'm happy that,
I noticed on your webpage that your group is very active. You not only have social meetings, but you are also advocating for certain causes, for gay rights, for population control. What are some of the activities of Atheists in Kenya?
Oh yes, we are also doing a lot of humanitarian work. Whenever we have an opportunity, we help a few people who are in need, and we've helped people who have been lacking money to go to school. We advocate for anything that is around human rights. You know, LGBTQ. We've already done that. We believe people have rights to practice what they practice, as long as it's not really affecting people negatively. So part of what we do is to advance any human rights issues that we feel is in line with our objectives. And one of our objectives is to look at the world from a rational and humanistic perspective. So we do humanitarian work. We look at human rights, and we look at issues like gender rights. And we've done a lot, you know, in that area. We have, for example, we want to move to court to challenge blasphemy laws. So we also look at laws that are not in line with current constitutional trends or progressive laws. So yes, we have a lot of things that we are doing, and our hope is that we are going to as much as possible enrich humanity as we move on as a society.
We have to take a break, Mumia. We're talking with Harrison Mumia, founder and president of Atheists in Kenya. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Harrison Mumia. He's founder and president of Atheists in Kenya.
And he goes by Mumia. And Mumia, I wanted to ask you to respond to the Kenyan president, William Ruto, who is your country's, I believe, first evangelical Christian leader. And in 2015, he said, Kenya is a republic that worships God. There is no room for homosexuality in Kenya, and apparently not for atheists. So what's he up to? What are your reactions to your president?
Yeah, the president is out of touch with, you know, the way the world is progressing. I mean, he comes from a background of being an evangelical. He supports a lot of evangelicals in Kenya. He seems to be saying that, you know, Kenya is a Christian or a religious country. We as a society, we objected to that. Our constitution gives rights to all people, irrespective of their religious opinions or views, or even irrespective of their sex or gender. I mean, it's very clear. So I think what he's doing is that he wants to appeal to the majority political right. He wants to ensure that he's always being supported by the religious groups in terms of his political career. And I think that is why he keeps pressing on this. Otherwise, as far as we are concerned, he is just being retrogressive in how he's looking at our laws and the constitution, and we will keep challenging that. We don't think he's on the right side of history. The LGBTQ community has a right to exist and to associate, and that's just a fundamental right, and our president is just getting it wrong, absolutely.
I think it's ironic, Mumia, that in 1964, Kenya really wanted independence from the colonial powers, but they don't want independence from the religion of the colonial powers. Is it true that there is still a blasphemy law in Kenya?
You know, there is a blasphemy law in Kenya. The Atheists in Kenya Society will be moving to court to challenge their blasphemy law. This is a very old colonial law that still exists in our statutes. And we think that in 2024, we should not be having a law against anybody who has an opinion about religion. Blasphemy should be out of our laws. People have freedom of expression, freedom of conscience, and we will be challenging the blasphemy law in Kenya.
Well, that's terrific. So your group is really activist. And I was wondering, you know, at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, we take a lot of lawsuits against violations of the separation of state and church, yeah, because theoretically we have a very strong separation in our constitution, even though it's always, yeah, being violated. What's the status of separation of state and church in Kenya?
I just repeat that again.
What is the status of separate? Is there a separation between state and church?
Oh, yeah. Yes, yes. So in Kenya, it's a bit different from the United States. I know you have, I think, is it the Second or First Amendment? Should be, I don't know.
First Amendment, yes.
that should be the First Amendment. So in Kenya, we have Article 8. Our constitution basically separates religion from state, and it says there shall be no state religion. So for us, it's just that. It says there shall be no state religion. We've not had what we call jurisprudence around this article. So that is what we're going to build.
Good.
Where the state cannot pass any law that aligns with the religious groups or even non-religious groups. The state has to be neutral in matters of religion or even non-religion for that matter.
That's wonderful that you have a legal plan and strategy to enforce Article 8, and I'm so glad to learn about that article. How many supporters do you have in Kenya?
There's a huge community of non-believers in Kenya. I mean, if you look at our Facebook page, we have over 28,000. If you look at our Instagram page, we have over 8,000. If you look at the membership, we have over 5,000. So there's a huge community.
That's wonderful for such a new group.
The only challenge we have is that they're not willing to come out. You know, if you tell them to come and come for our meetings, you know, most of them will be like, no, I don't want to be seen anywhere because of this and that. So what we are doing is to try and normalize. They should feel comfortable coming for our meetings. So, but online, our online community is very strong, and I think that is what we are capitalizing on to build this community.
Do you have any strategies to try to get people to come together in person? Maybe, I don't know, something, do you do something fun?
We do have about 2 physical meetings every month. One is a book club. Our book club, we discuss, you know, various books. It could be a book about religion. We look at it critically. It could be a book written by an atheist. It could be a book written by a philosopher. So we do come and engage and discuss certain books. We also have something called the Godless Corner, where atheists are able to come and just have conversations, make friends, and meet and engage and just have fun. So we are trying as much as possible to engage and provide a platform for atheists to engage.
So besides atheism, I noticed that Atheists in Kenya is also a member, I think still a member of Humanists International. Do you all call yourselves humanists as well?
If you look at our objectives, we promote humanistic values. And it's true, we are a member of Humanists International. And, you know, Humanists International is an umbrella body of secularists, humanists, atheists, agnostics, and so on. Any organization that is non-religious or promotes secular values or humanistic values. So we actually are also, we do promote humanistic values. And I actually personally think that an alternative to religion is humanism, where we are looking at each other as human beings and we promote the flourishing of humanity.
Well, that's a lovely concept, the flourishing of humanity instead of being enslaved to dogma. So, Mumia, you've done some controversial things. You've called for the government to introduce a one-child policy. Why did you do that?
You know, the thing is, in Kenya, we do have the poverty rates are very high, unemployment rates are very high. I think this also applies to Africa. So what we are asking is we need to have some sort of awareness that, you know, if you're getting a child, I think you need to be able to take care of a child. You need to be able to mentally, you know, sometimes even financially, you need to be responsible for the decision of bringing a human being to this world. That is my position. And I think when I did that statement, it was received very positively by even religious people. The point here is, I think we have to look at population as an issue, not just in Kenya, but anywhere. Population without resources can affect the quality of lifestyle of humanity. And that's something we need to discuss.
And what is there family planning options in Kenya? And is abortion available? Are tubal ligations, sterilizations available readily in Kenya?
Family planning is available. Abortion is allowed, but it is very controlled. You know, it's only allowed under very medically necessary, you know, circumstances. What we are saying is families need to take responsibility as well for the outcomes of their decisions. Big families are not doing Kenyans very well, especially with the kind of poverty levels we have.
Well, thank you, Mumia, for being with us today, and thank you for all your work promoting reason, atheism, science, and humanism in Kenya. Well, that is our show for today. Free Thought Radio is recorded in the Stephen Old Friendly Atheist Studio. We want to say greetings to our listeners in Philadelphia to WOOM and Bryn Mawr to WZML. Right here in Madison, Wisconsin, there's two stations, WMUULP and WIDE-FM. In Janesville, Wisconsin, the WADR. In College Station, Texas, KEOS. And in San Marcos, Texas, KZSM. In Missouri, Columbia, Missouri, KLPN. Hello to listeners in Eugene, Oregon, to KEPW. And in Vermont, New Hampshire, to WOOL. In Kingston, Rhode Island, WRIU, and Ithaca, Watkins Glen, New York, WRFI. Tell your friends and family about FFRF.org, about Free Thought Radio at FFRF.org/radio.
And find out more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at FFRF.org, or just join us. There's a join link on our website, or on the homepage, you can click Ask for Info link, and we'd be glad to send you complimentary information, keeping your information confidential, our newspaper, Free Thought Today, a brochure about our 46 years of activism. And we invite you to tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.